The proposed Twin Metals copper-nickel mine at Ely has deeply divided environmentalists and those who support economic development. According to one side, the large underground mine would create hundreds of jobs, short-term and long-term, and revitalize a sagging mining economy. On the other side, environmentalists say such an operation on the edge of the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness runs the risk of irreparable damage to the nation's most visited wilderness. Mine supporters point to the use of copper in our modern technologies, smartphones, computers, storage batteries, and more. Those in opposition point to pollution from sulfide rock runoff and an unsafe history of storage and cleanup by mining companies. Enter graphene. What caught our attention was the statement that graphene is a strong carbon material, just one atom wide, and conducts electricity better than copper. As we read more about the properties of graphene, the more we wanted to learn about its developing uses and its commercial future, and how it might fit into the Twin Metals controversy. Joining us is co-author of Graphene, the Super Strong, Super Thin, and Super Versatile material that will revolutionize the world. He wrote the book with Les Johnson, and we are speaking with Dr. Joseph Meany. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Glad to be here.
Well, first fill us in on graphene. What is it, and what are the properties that makes you excited enough to write a book about it, which was pretty exciting in itself, I have to say, and where we are in the development stage. So what's graphene?
Yeah, absolutely. So to talk about graphene, I'm actually going to start with what most people are actually going to be a bit more familiar with, and that's the mineral graphite. Mm-hmm. Now, people are familiar with the mineral graphite as, you know, the lead, if you will, in pencil lead. And we're able to write with these pencils because as we move the tip across the page, little sheets slough off and mark onto the page. And it's these individual sheets that make up graphite that are graphene. And so if you think of, I'm a breakfast food kind of guy, so I like pancakes. If you think of a stack of pancakes mm-hmm. as graphite, one single pancake is graphene itself. And graphene is starting to find a whole lot of uses in beginning in some high-tech consumer goods, and we'll talk about that a little bit more later on. Mm-hmm. But I'm really excited to start seeing it in electronics applications and even in uses out in space and in construction.
Well, I understand that some of the high-tech companies are pretty excited about it, too. I read someplace where Samsung is investing heavily in the development of this, primarily because, I suppose, storage batteries and all that kind of thing. I mean, they're in the business of keeping people in touch. But it seems to me that there's an awful lot of activity going on right now. But how do we get this stuff? I mean, do we dig it? Do we make it in a lab? I know it's being made in the lab. In fact, if I understand it correctly, two gentlemen that discovered these properties actually won the Nobel Prize for it in 2012. But also, we're talking about carbon, and it's the fourth most common element. And as I recall from the first Star Wars, even we are carbon-based units. So how do we get this stuff?
Absolutely. You're totally right. So you mentioned Gaiman Novoselov, who won the Nobel Prize mm-hmm. for popularizing the use of graphene in 2010. Their experiment in 2004 that won them that Nobel Prize was they actually took some Scotch tape from off of their desk and a hunk of graphite and just peeled some layers off of the top of that hunk of graphite, looked at it under a very specialized type microscope and found that they'd actually peeled off down to single flakes of this graphite. And so nowadays, graphene is made in a couple of different ways, depending on how expensive you want to make it and how pure you need to make it. And so graphite that's mined out of the ground, you can actually sort of exfoliate or explode that into a lot of the individual sheets that make up that graphite mineral. And you can use all sorts of chemical processes and physical agitation, like a blender, in order to get those sheets separated from one another. And that's one of the cheapest ways in order to get graphene. But the graphene that you get out of that is rather impure and has to go through a couple of extra processing steps to make it really useful in high-tech applications. But to make pure graphene without having to go through that kind of step, there's also epitaxially grown graphene and chemical vapor deposition grown graphene. And I'm going to kind of gloss over the details here, but it's basically a way to take a carbon-based material, methane or sugar, or even people, if you want to be really macabre about it, and take the carbon from that source and chemically react it so that the carbon atoms themselves bond into the hexagon lattice that makes up these graphene single sheets. And these have a tendency to make more pure graphene sheets than we're able to get from simply mined graphite, but they are far, far more expensive than making the graphene from graphite.
Well, I understand the challenge also is getting it in large quantities, like sheets that you can actually use. But it has been used in some products and substances already. So what's that going to be? I mean, how do you get a sheet of this stuff?
Well, I don't know if we've quite cracked the code yet. So the consumer products that are out on the market right now involving graphene, there's some bike tires, there's some shoes, there's some golf balls out there. There are some people that are even throwing graphene inside paint over, I believe, in the UK. Mm-hmm. But all of these uses are actually graphene composites. So we're not talking about pure graphene here, but we're talking about usually exfoliated graphene from the graphite that is then blended and mixed into other materials to change the properties of that original material. And exfoliated graphite is never actually going to give us the size of the sheets that we want if we're going to start making large window coverings or water repellent surfaces. I know there are a couple of companies, Maersk, I think maybe, might be looking at coating their boats in single sheets of graphene to cut down on friction in shipping materials around the world in their very large vessels. You can imagine there's a lot of inefficiency introduced to these boats just by drag on the water. But if you're able to reduce that drag, you can increase your fuel efficiency and decrease your shipping costs. But as of right now, MIT had created a roll-to-roll type chemical vapor deposition process for creating these large sheets of graphene. And they say they were successful, but I haven't seen the data on how pure that single sheet of graphene is. I'd have to go back and refresh myself on the paper.
Mm-hmm. Well, talk to me a little bit about, in the intro piece that I read, we're interested, it caught our attention here at the studio, because of the conductivity of graphene. Talk a little bit about that vis-a-vis copper. And it says, is it feasible to assume that someday in the reasonably near future we'd be using this stuff instead of something like copper?
As far as electrical equipment is concerned, I certainly hope so. Graphene's definitely not going to replace your fancy pots and pans, because graphene, being only a single atom thick, mm-hmm. Is actually very flexible. It's still strong, but it's also very flexible, so it doesn't hold shape particularly well. But if we could start running transmission cables out of graphene that are very nearly lossless, then we could see incredible efficiencies being delivered to the power grid, and certainly being able to see data transmission, you know, internet speeds grow out in more rural areas. So the development challenges in a lot of the Midwest and Southeast that we see, we could actually overcome some of those barriers if we're able to produce lots of pristine graphene that's also very conductive.
I understand that there's been some research with storage batteries. Is that true?
Yeah. Storage techniques with graphene not only include batteries, but you'll start to hear the term supercapacitors come up more and more often. Graphene is really nice. At a single atom thick, it has basically the entire sheet is its own surface area. Mm-hmm. And so it has no insides, if you will, when it comes to electrical conductivity. Now, capacitors work by having two conducting plates separated by some distance with a non-conducting middle. They're kind of sandwiches. Mm-hmm. And capacitors are limited mostly in their efficiency by the surface area of these conducting plates. Now, if you have something like graphene that's both exceptionally thin, exceptionally light, and it's flexible, you can imagine creating high surface area, very light, almost entirely invisible, and extremely high storage of these supercapacitors, almost as if you took a paper towel roll and those individual rolls would become the conducting surfaces themselves. And you could store a lot of power in those that would charge up very quickly and be able to be discharged as at whatever rate you want them to. So then they become very attractive for applications that either need to charge and discharge quickly, or at least charge quickly and then discharge over a long period of time, like your cell phones. So if you could imagine having a cell phone that you plugged up, went to brush your teeth, and all of a sudden you're back at 100% from a dead battery, that's kind of the goal. And we'd like to see that in a lot more of our products, too, with graphene involved.
Well, I don't know. I may be asking you a question that you don't know anything about. But what I'm hearing or what I'm imagining is it wasn't too many months ago that the Tesla Corporation built the biggest storage battery in the world and put it out in the middle of Australia. Is that the kind of thing we could be using this for?
That's right. And I don't know what it was that Tesla made their battery out of, because that particular storage facility doesn't have to move anywhere. Mm-hmm. It could be basically made out of anything. So I can't exactly speak to the makeup of that. But the idea of portable storage of power is really the clincher for being able to, you know, extend our cell phone or laptop batteries, or be able to deliver power to remote locations, particularly in the developing world.
Well, you said, in effect, once graphene production can be controlled, the sky's pretty much the limit. Is this a function of cost? Are there technical barriers that need to be overcome, or both of those?
It's a little bit of both. So the technical barrier right now is being able to make a large sheet of graphene. And actually, I was interviewed by Vox a few months back when the book came out, and I basically broke it down for them like this. I said, once you can create a square inch of graphene that's absolutely perfect, it might as well be a mile. Mm. Because right now we can't get very large. We're still on the micrometer and millimeter scale of producing graphene, and there are still a lot of defects in the way that the carbon atoms connect to one another in these graphene sheets. You could also almost think of them as little ripples or divots or indentations in this lattice. That's not perfectly technically accurate, but it's a decent representation. So once we're able to reach that point where every carbon atom is surrounded by three others, once there are a perfect hexagonal lattice at about an inch scale, then it might as well go on forever.
Well, in the intro to the discussion, I cited the copper-nickel mine controversy here in our backyard. Mm-hmm. My purpose is not to involve you in an ongoing political debate, but I've got a couple of questions. I mean, in your mind, since you have a very positive feel about this substance, could graphene materials adequately take the place of precious metals or copper in devices where they are currently used? Do you envision that kind of thing happening, and how would you do that?
I'm going to couch this and say yes and no. Okay. And I know you weren't absolutely expecting that, but will graphene probably replace bulk applications of precious metals? I think that's going to be definitely a yes. But there are areas within chemistry, particularly catalysis, where these precious metals can see use that carbon absolutely cannot be a replacement for. And so there are some anti-cancer drugs, there are some antimicrobials, and stuff of that nature that are based on using these metals in the chemistry of the substance, and we absolutely need those to stick around because graphene can't replace those. But I think as far as what we look up and see above our heads with all these cables and wires, that the power transmission can absolutely shrink, especially if we're able to generate and store our own electricity a lot more locally.
Well, in the future, What will we be looking at? Will it be economically possible to use graphene in a wide variety of materials, or do you speculate the production and cost will remain barriers? Once it seems to me, anyway, that once industry gets a hold of something like this, they find ways to make it usable and affordable. But it sounds like at this point, a pretty complex process. So, how do you feel that's going to play out? And you got any idea of when?
When these sheets will really become into high use? Oh, boy, I suppose if I knew the answer to that question, I would quit my job and start investing.
We were going to ask you about where we should invest, but you just made the point. Okay. Well, Doctor, tell me, anything else you want to say about this material? You wrote the book.
Well, I know you were interested in talking about the mining aspect, and so we can start talking about that a little bit.
Sure.
But, you know, I would say to the listeners from what they've heard here that, you know, if this has sort of piqued their interest, that we go into a whole lot more depth on a bunch of the topics that we've touched on here into the book. So that's a really good place to find out a lot more beginning information.
And I should say that book is published by Prometheus Books, and the name is Graphene, the Super Strong, Super Thin, and Super Versatile Material that Will Revolutionize the World. We've been talking to Dr. Joseph Meany. His co-author is Les Johnson, and I found it very interesting and certainly something we should follow. And I don't know, do you have websites or anything like this that you could address?
Yeah, so you could find the book at tiny.cc/thegraphenebook. Mm-hmm. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Crimson Alchemist. That's Crimson with a C, Alchemist spelled A-L-K-E-M-I-S-T. And You can find Les Johnson on Twitter at Les Author. And yeah.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much. I know it's a very technical topic. I'm really glad we had an opportunity to talk to you, because this has been sticking in the back of my mind ever since I ran across it a couple of 3 months ago. And thank you again, Dr. Meany, and hope to talk to you soon and maybe even have some more good news. If, in fact, some big breakthrough happens, you've got my email.
Absolutely. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
You bet.